What's going on? Welcome back to another edition of the Just Swing It podcast. I am Chris McBride. I'm joined, as per normal, by John Burrell and Fat Baby Funds. How's it going, guys?
Going well. Just losing money in the market. Everything's normal.
Yeah, sounds about right.
I had my regular Tuesday routine. Go to work early, get off early, beat the traffic, get to the gym, play a little basketball. Haven't been playing well. Everything except for the market. I've been doing is basically been around going to the gym, playing some music, cleaning up our where we live, and cleaning out the music room, and been getting a lot of stuff done and taken care of. So I have a little bit more time to focus on all the things that I enjoy doing and not have constantly stuff to do. So just went in, deep cleaned the house, and just got caught up on a bunch of stuff. So it feels good to have everything done and be able to work on some fun projects now.
Yeah, same with me. That's kind of how, just getting that test over with, pretty much – you know, if I pass it, pretty much opened the door for me to be able to focus on a lot more stuff. I also went to the gym today, did leg day, and then decided to run. I felt like I was going to die afterwards, so in very bad shape. But speaking of getting stuff done, my wife, she had to have like a small surgery. She had to have her gallbladder taken out a couple of weeks ago, so she's just been home off of work, and I've just been able to put her to work. Like, just here's a list of all the stuff that's been piling up. So she's been doing a good job and working on that. But yeah, the market's been pretty kind of pretty shitty.
Yeah, across the board too. I mean, if you look at all major asset classes, pretty much everything is down.
Yeah, but we'll get to all that. We had the Canadian futures trader on last week. So if you haven't listened to that, be sure to go listen to that. Talked a lot about futures, but not just futures. We talked about, you know, just some good habits in trading in general. I mean, he was talking about it as it applied to futures, but really you can take journaling and some of the other concepts he was talking about and apply that to stock trading, investing, or really, you know, really anything. A lot of stuff outside the market, you can apply some of those too. So that was a good show. Be sure to check that out. It was a pretty long show, so we'll try to keep it a little bit short tonight. You know, like we said, the market's been kind of shitty. Everything's been down. Gas is at an all-time high. Real estate is outrageous. Biden's still president. John's penis is still small. Chris Paul can't win in the playoffs. Tom Brady keeps getting richer. You know, so pretty much covered.
I just throw stuff in there.
I caught that one too. I was like, oh.
Yeah, pretty much covered it all there. We could probably end the show here, and everyone, you know, knows as much as we do. But might as well talk about something. So we'll start out as per normal. We'll let Fat Baby Funds try to teach us something, even though you gotta start questioning that nowadays. But nah. Let's learn something about financials, I guess, Fat Baby.
Yeah, so I believe last time we were talking about unit economics, and I think a good one to talk about right now. Did we talk about churn in the past?
Yes, we did.
We did? Oh, yeah. And then I believe we talked about churn and customer acquisition costs. The other major portions of this is the LTV, which is the lifetime value of a customer. So really what you're doing at that point is, when you've got your customer acquisition cost, how much it costs to gain a customer, then you have your churn, how long you're going to keep that customer. The other main component is how much that customer is going to make you. So think of this generally as not necessarily the sales for that customer. You have to think of it, okay, what's the cost to serve of that customer, everything like that. You factor that in. So So think of it as sort of as the contribution margin for the customer. So how much net income is that customer going to get you over time? If you can get down to that rate, then once you start combining that with the customer acquisition cost and churn, you can start to understand the profitability of a business. And this is where a lot of businesses can sort of get interesting. For instance, I don't know, do you guys remember the business MoviePass when that was hot like 3 or 4 years ago?
Never heard of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So essentially what it was it was a pass that essentially let you watch as many movies as you wanted to. So in physical theaters. So you would go to the theater and it cost you $15 a month or something, and you could see as many movies as you wanted. So instead of paying
back.
Well, so that's what I'm getting at. The reason it didn't work out is because none of the unit economics made any sense. So a ticket costs you $10, and so the people who would go to see two movies a month, which are probably driving the majority of the revenue for this business, all of a sudden they bought the movie pass and they're like, this is great, I can see as many movies as I want. But the financials just never made sense because A, churn is low, the customer acquisition cost is pretty low, so those unit economics are really good, but they don't make money off these customers because all of a sudden on the other end of this, they have to pay for the movies. They have to pay all the costs for keeping up the theaters. And when you start to add it up, it doesn't make enough sense to financially for them. So the idea is you have to look at the profitability as well. Customer acquisition costs and churn isn't enough because this is a business that's great for customers. You're going to have a lot of customers join. You're going to not have a ton of customer leaves. You're going to be stuck with all these movie fanatics, but your business isn't going to be making any money because you still have to pay to gain the rights to show the movies. Then you have to pay all these different fees, which are going to add up for every time they see the movie and they're watching the movie for free. So the economics of it at the price point they were at didn't make sense. If you raise the price point, that's where some of this can get interesting. This business might make more sense if it's $30 a month. All of a sudden at that point.
I assume at the time it was, the idea was they probably don't make that much. How much money does a movie theater make on the tickets? I assume a lot of the money is made on concessions. So I assume they thought that's how it would work out. And then, like you said, the price point being $15 a month when one ticket is almost $15 doesn't really make a lot of sense. I wonder how it would work out now that you can watch pretty much all the new movies like a week later on HBO. You know, is there any chance it would work out now as an incentive to actually go to the movie theater, buy popcorn, and that sort of thing? I would assume right now most people are just watching movies from home and not going to the theater.
Yeah, I mean, now it's got to be tough. It's tough for these movie theaters. There's a reason AMC is buying Gold Mines. It's because that business is dying. I don't see that business making it very long. But overall, it's an interesting example. And I mean, the end of the story is this company sort of had to end that business really shortly after it started, because all of a sudden, pretty quickly, they were like, oh, we are not making money. We are losing money very fast. We cannot afford this. So that sort of ties all the customer acquisition costs, churn, and then you have to look at the LTV of the customer as well. And this is a very key way to analyze financials overall. There's a lot more to financials, but if you can sort of understand these three concepts, you can start to understand which businesses are going to be duds. It's hard to pick which ones are going to work out, but if you could find one that has a high churn rate or has a high customer acquisition cost or has a low LTV, then those are probably businesses you want to stay away from.
Yeah, just think in your head, if something sounds like too good of a deal, that might be a business you want to stay away from. Like this movie thing, if you hear $15 a month to go watch any movie you want, from a customer standpoint, that's awesome. So right away you should be thinking, hey, is that such a good business decision? But I guess at the same time, you know, sometimes if you like it, people around you like it, everybody in town likes it, then it could be a good business idea. But just gotta balance.
Yeah, and I mean, when you think about it, Netflix is sort of the same way. But the difference is Netflix pays a fixed cost to create House of Cards. And then the more people watch it, the better for them. So their economics are way different than a movie has. So I think sometimes people get this idea any subscription business is a good subscription business. But that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, they're Netflix and I would assume, you know, the others, HBO, everyone. They probably negotiate a contract at the forefront, and then that's the price they had to pay for it. It's not a moving target. John, do you have something?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to add to that. I think as far as the movie business goes, I think only maybe the super premium movie theaters where it's got like couches and people wait on you hand and foot, like some of the movie theaters we have here in Charlotte, because people still like the experience as far as like going out and or either having a dinner or going to a movie theater. But I do think that for the most part, just going to a regular movie theater, I always rather liked, I'd rather stay at home. I mean, we just got a new TV, a 70-inch, and it's plenty big enough for me, and if we want to get some food or some popcorn or something, it doesn't cost an arm and a leg. So I do think every now and then just the experience of things always has value, but not just like regular seating, regular movie theaters when cost of TVs have came drastically down over the years, and you can get a way bigger TV now than you could ever at much cheaper prices. So I definitely think that the industry as a whole definitely gonna decline and continue to, but you will still have movie theaters of like more premium experience driven movie theaters, I think.
Yeah, and I would almost not even put those in the same categories. Like you said, the traditional theater, at this point, you know, with the as cheap as TVs are and the quality of TVs, you can get a really nice TV that's basically almost movie theater quality for pretty cheap just at your house. So there's really no reason to just go to a traditional movie theater, be uncomfortable in the seat when you can lay on the couch, drink a beer. But like you said, the premium movie theaters, which I would almost put in a different category, some of those are pretty cool. Like there's theaters where you can eat dinner while watching movies, stuff like that's a little bit yeah, different. And then as of, you know, still right now, there'll be some movies that come out that are, you know, you should go see in the theater, whether it's, you know, you like at home better or whatever. Like the new Top Gun movie that's coming out that has theaters written all over it. Avatar 2, if it ever comes out, that's a theater movie. But yeah, we're getting away from every movie being, you know, go watching a theater because you can get the same quality at the house, basically.
Or better.
Yeah. All right, cool. So come back next week and Fat Baby will try to teach us another thing about financials, and maybe we won't get off on a movie theater conversation. But moving on, John, I'm sure you got something you would like to talk about.
Yeah, just going to run through the markets here a little bit. So the markets in general, pretty much a shit show at this point, garbage, dumpster fire. So we got the VIX, volatility of the S&P 500 index at 32.99. It was down 5% today. We got the SPX. It has dipped below 4,000 the last 2 days, but it closed at $4,001.05. It was up 0.25% today. This is bearish trend. To be bullish trend, it would have to get above 43.50. So we are deep bearish trend at this point. Still staying out. We have, with the higher with the higher volatility, the higher implied volatility, and the bearish trend of the price, it's something that we're staying away from. And that's the broad market too. If you look at the NASDAQ or the Russell, it's even worse. Go into bonds. Bonds are bearish trend as well. Something that I think is going to start going the other way, but once again, the trend's your friend. Don't fight it like I've tried to the last little bit. But they are starting to come off their highs and starting to work, but they still have a ways to go before their bullish trend. TLT would have to get above 134, and it's at 115, so it is very bearish trend. So you got everything from the stock market to the bond market that is bearish trend. And that's something that's very interesting, is usually when bear markets happen, bonds do well. And that was my assumption this time, and that's why I went against the trend as far as bonds go. And it just hasn't worked. It may work in the future. I think the Fed, this is one of the things that we have talked about before, is the Fed making a policy mistake. We talked about this like 2 or 3 months ago as being one of the risks, and they are absolutely raising rates into a economic slowdown. That's the macroeconomic data that we're receiving is decelerating pretty rapidly and is only going to continue. So I could see this playing out favorably for bonds, but it's something that definitely taking heat right now. Moving on to the dollar is absolutely ripping to the upside versus all the other currencies, which is surprising because we have domestic inflation, but all the other countries have versus the dollar. So the way the dollar is priced is versus other currencies. So the dollar is actually getting stronger on an international level, but it's but we're having domestic inflation. Very interesting setup. It's the dollar's bullish trend. I look at the small dollar index from the small exchange. It's at 161. To get bearish trend, it had to go below 152. So it is ripping to the upside. Something that's affecting everybody right now is crude oil, a light sweet crude oil. It is at 98.90 at the moment. It has had some extraordinary volatility. So this is something that we talked about a few months ago as potentially being a short. We have not went short on this yet. I said I would let everyone know. It ripped as high as like one. My chart says 121, but that's this futures contract. I think it actually got up to 130 on the previous futures contract, but it's at $99 right now. It's still trading in open market hours overnight. So it definitely has came down quite a bit the last couple of days. So that's looking good. It's at $99, like I said. To get bearish trend, it had to go below 85. So if it gets below 85, I'm going to start shorting it. It's still got a ways to go, but this is one of the things I was talking about before too, is bonds usually go up in a bear market, and oil usually follows with the market or leads the market. And due to some of the global and geopolitical conflicts that we've had, it's kind of made everything different this time. And, you know, we talked about this too. It's a way different setup. You know, we were talking about the yield curve inverting and all this stuff, and we were saying, you know, this is way different setups than we've ever seen. And it is different setups, but I think it still plays out the same. So definitely keep that in mind. Gold broke trend. Trend is at 1858. It's currently at 1832. I'm going to still stay long gold at these levels. I bought it earlier in the year, so I'm actually still profitable on the trade. If it goes any lower, then I'll probably just go ahead and close it out for a scratch. But where I'm still profitable, I'm going to still keep with this because it's barely below trend. I think that, you know, one of these asset classes is eventually got to go up, and gold seems to be the strongest out of the bunch. Silver is getting destroyed. I think it's had a ridiculous amount of down days. I mean, I don't even 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 down days in a row. So might start nibbling on silver, but it is bearish trend, but you might be able to make a trade on it. Bitcoin is bleeding. It's at 31,000 currently right now. It's had some massive down days, you know, over the last few weeks. Its trend is at 43,000 and it's at 30,000. So it is deep bearish trend. You could probably play it for a bounce, but yeah, everything here as far as the main macro markets, from stocks to bonds to oil, well, oil is bullish trend, but it's kind of on the upper end of its historical range, so it isn't even something I would look at buying here. So everything except for oil basically is bearish trend, and oil is on the high side of its range historically, so really nothing is doing well here. I mean, even oil over the last couple months is actually negative. So if you've bought anything this year, you're most likely down. I think my portfolio, looking at it here, I am down, let's see, I'm down somewhere around 10-12% on the year from the all-time highs. I had an all-time high at the end of last year, so I'm down about 12%. I mean, just tough markets. I mean, the only thing that's really been working is my day trading account. I mean, as far as investing or trend trading or swing trading, it's been pretty terrible. So definitely a dumpster fire out there. What is you all's thoughts on the overall markets?
Yeah, I haven't been trading for a while now, but now with my newfound time, I might look to get back into dabbling a little bit in the trades. But yeah, just in, like you said, if you've bought anything this year, you're probably down. I wouldn't look too far into it unless you're older and is looking to retire or something. For me, some of the stuff being down, I actually don't mind because I wanted more of it anyhow. And now it's a lot cheaper, actually. But I'm bumping on one of the things that, you know, John was talking about. The oil prices have, you know, they've actually came down, you know, quite a bit, even though they're at, you know, still high. But if you look at the actual gas prices, and that's due to other factors, we actually hit all-time highs in the average price of gas across the U.S. today. So today, the average price of gas is $4.37 a gallon, which I'm pretty sure is the all-time highs there. And then, you know, we're right at Memorial Day, which is typically around the peak of, you know, gas prices as well, just because of the way refineries are set up from going from winter to summer. So
yeah, and in my company truck, I got gas today for $4.19, and it's got to the point to where when we're on a job site, we're pretty much forced to turn our trucks off just because of the cost of the company in gas. So, you know, before we could let our trucks idle and have the AC on and all that kind of stuff, and now they're starting to tighten up on how much idle time we can have.
And that's $4.19 in the South, folks. If you're elsewhere, it could be substantially higher. Typically, you know, Virginia, North Carolina is probably about the same as Virginia a lot of times. South Carolina is a little bit cheaper than North Carolina, but it's probably $4 there as well. So we're talking $4 in places that are typically the cheaper places in the U.S. to buy gas. And the one thing I think some people don't think about when they're looking at, you know, other sectors of the market, other things in the market, is the gas prices pretty much affect almost everything in the market. Because if gas goes up, you know, think about airlines that, if you went to buy a plane ticket right now, they're higher because it costs more to buy gas to fill the planes. Any company that has to ship stuff, diesel's substantially higher right now. They have to, you know, they have to pay more to ship things. So when gas prices are up, it's not just that sector of the market that's being affected. It's pretty much, you know, every sector of the market that gets affected by you know, oil and gas prices. So it's, whether you trade oil or whatever, it's a very important one to watch, because it will definitely have an effect on other sectors.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, oil is such a big part of the global economy, and with the prices being where it's at, you know, it's really putting a hurting on everyone, from people going to work or for transportation companies, and it's really going to squeeze margins, because with the inflation we've already seen and the supply chain issues we've had and everything else that's going on, it's just, people can only afford so much of something. So it's really going to put a hurting on a lot of the companies as far as like their profitability.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, we'll probably see some differences. We'll see companies who raise their prices because it costs, you know, gas costs more and some of that sort of stuff. And then we'll see some companies who will eat it on the margin side to, you know, still provide the better cost to the consumer. So there'll be both strategies there. We'll see which one works out. I mean, I saw last night, like we said, everything's high. Last night on one of the news shows or financial shows, they had on the CEO of Allstate. He was on there bitching and moaning about how all the insurance companies together need to collaborate and all need to raise their premiums, because now the vehicles are much more expensive. So, you know, if something happens, they're having to pay more and that sort of thing. But yeah, that, he was talking about that last night.
Yeah.
Vehicle prices are out of control. My truck that I bought 2 years ago, it has almost 30,000 miles on it, is worth like $8,000 more now than when I bought it. If I took it to a dealership right now, I would be able to trade it in for $8,000 to $10,000 more than I bought the truck for.
That's insane.
And I bought the truck new. So now a used truck with 30,000 miles is worth more currently.
Wow.
I screwed up. I should have bought the bigger truck to begin with, but it was probably like five, six grand right there. I was like, I don't really need the bigger one right now, so I'm not going to. But now that the markets went up, it should have bought the nice one to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't see how, I mean, it doesn't make sense. You know, I don't see how these things can continue. And I think that cheap is going to get cheaper. You know, I think the market, and this is something to think about too, it's always about at what price. You can have a great company, but it's at what price is it worth, you know? So you can have a great company, but if your old truck is worth more than a new truck, that's just, I mean, that's so out of touch with reality. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with the old truck, but something that's brand new should be worth something that's more than something that's 2 years old. I mean, even though, like, probably today's price would probably be more than today's used price, or, you know, but you bought this truck 2 years.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, but still saying, like, you bought this truck 2 years ago, and you can get, like, used vehicles typically do not appreciate in value.
Like, at all.
Yeah, so this is like a very big disconnect. And I think the markets across the board have been so disconnected because people have been chasing yield and return. And with interest rates have been low for too long, it's pushed people to massive speculation. I mean, you have everything from the shitcoin bubble to used car prices to, I mean, just, it's just, we were so overdone and inflated that this really shouldn't surprise anybody what's happening.
There's tons of other stuff too, like, you know, real estate. We bought our house two years ago, and Zillow has the estimate about $80,000 more than when we bought it, and they don't know. Zillow is basing it off, you know, basically how it sat when we bought it. they don't know that we've rent, you know, redid the entire floor, fenced in the backyard, and it's worth like $80,000 more on their estimate than
Right. And they haven't even looked. You could have destroyed the inside of the house for all they know.
Yeah, I mean, it's the opposite of that. So it's if we put the renovations we've done, it would be worth more than $80,000.
Yeah,
more.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, but to your point is like they don't know what you've done to it, whether it be good or bad, and they've already over.
Yeah, what I was trying to show there is, you know, it's constant from when we bought it to now. You know, nothing's changed on the house, and that's how much it's went up. I mean,
right. Exactly. Yeah.
That's crazy. It's been 2 years, so I assume at some point we're going to see a pretty good back off on the real estate, probably here pretty soon, because I think the interest rates are about 5.5%, headed towards 6 right now, which is, this time last year they were probably what, like 3.2 or something.
Yeah, they got below 3, I know, for like a 30-year fixed, and now I think they're like over 5 or more.
Yeah, it's over 5 right now. Of course, that's on purpose to fight the inflation, but.
Yeah, I mean, and once again, the Fed should have done this earlier when stocks were soaring to record highs, and not doing it when things have already priced in at their all-time highs. I mean, but at the same time, you see everything from like Netflix, Facebook, Peloton. I mean, there's like a bunch of names that are down like 70%. I mean, it's crazy, but once again, I think the broad market and those companies too could probably continue going lower. I wouldn't be surprised if this doesn't get way worse before it gets better. I mean, if you look at Netflix, for example, at one point it hit $700, I think just over $700. It hit almost $701 at its high. It had a couple big spikes down, so it went from 508 to 397. Some would say that's a huge move, but then it creeped down from 400 to 335, and some would say, oh, that's even more. And then it had a huge jump to 335 to 229, and then now it's at 177. So I mean, it's not whether or not they're a good company. In my opinion, it's whether or not they're a good company at that price. And that's something I feel like a lot of people will look at these companies and say, like Apple, for example. Apple is a great company, but at what price?
It hasn't moved too much, though.
Yeah, Apple is one of the ones that hasn't moved.
I mean, it was like 170 a little bit ago. Now it's like 156 or something.
Yeah, it was at 179, almost 180, and now it's at 154.51. But it literally just broke trend here recently. So I could see Apple getting just destroyed here. So you got trend at 158. It's at 154. So it's barely below trend. I say, you know, Apple is something everyone's invested in, and it's kind of been a safe asset, and it's got the most liquidity and the most people invested in it. If we see a true, you know, big time sell off, I think it's probably one of the last things to go, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's something I wouldn't buy here at these levels just because it's bearish trend. So if we look at this thing in a couple months and it's way cheaper, remember where you heard it from.
Yeah, Apple's actually.
When Apple goes, the whole market goes. That's when the real panic comes in. Because Apple has done okay. But when Apple starts taking 30, 40% hits and it's 8 or 9% of the S&P 500, yeah, that's when people are going to start bleeding.
Yeah, and I don't think the worst is over. I mean, I think we have a lot of speculation and a lot of cleaning house to do. I mean, there's probably a lot of fraudulent companies that need to be washed out. There's a lot of zombie companies with they're not making any money. I mean, we've seen all these companies that were just an idea that had no money, no revenue, no net income, operating in the negative at these crazy high valuations. I mean, it was just so detached from reality. I mean, at some point, your business has to make money, and it can't be worth 700 times revenue or 700 times, net income, or, it just doesn't make sense at those levels. I mean, PE ratios across the board, has just been ridiculous. So, I think we got a lot of worse stuff to come. And like I said, if this is over, and the S&P gets back to 437, I'll buy them, and I won't give two shits. But unless it gets to 437, I'm gonna stay away from equities, because it doesn't seem. I mean, you have volatility with a three handle in front of it. I mean, low 30s, and if this is a bear market, I wouldn't be surprised if it was 60. And then at that point, regardless of trend, I could probably sell some pretty nice at the money puts with a lot of protection to downside from the premium at that kind of volatility levels. I'd probably jump in then with regardless of the trend. But other than that, I think there's a lot more pain to come.
Actually, I think we're getting pretty close to the bottom. I think if you look across the board, a lot of the ones that had the super high, valuations and stuff like that, they've kind of came down. And yeah, I think the last couple of earnings sessions, you're seeing companies report, actually pretty good revenue numbers, and the stock still takes a big hit, which means they were overpriced to begin with. So if a company is coming out and they killed it on revenue, and all of a sudden they take a hit, either they gave terrible guidance or they were already overpriced and it was going to do that no matter what. Netflix go up.
What happens when those companies that were posting positive earnings go negative, and they had these sell-offs that got them back in line with reality? What happens when they go negative? When they got to start firing people?
Well, if they go negative, then it's probably not that great of a company, right? Like some of these companies that were overpriced were well in the positive. That doesn't mean just because they were making money doesn't mean they also still wasn't overpriced. So you're talking very specifically about
that was my whole argument. What you're saying, that was my whole argument as well. But I'm saying, what if these?
But I think we're there. But what I'm saying is I don't think companies are going to start losing money. Like, I don't think Netflix is all of a sudden going to be, losing a bunch of money, right? But they were still – that doesn't mean you should have bought it at $700.
Right, yeah.
But now we're starting to get back into order. Like, for example, Penn's PE ratio right now, I think it's 14. So we're back – at one point it was over 100. So we're back at – if you start looking at PE ratios of some of the companies now, we're starting to get back in line, even with some of these, higher growth stocks, which you would expect to have a higher PE ratio.
One thing that I'm really looking forward to is the last market crash. There was companies that had more cash on hand than their current market cap. And that's what I'm waiting for. That's when I get all fundamental.
Yeah, I don't know about all that, but yeah, we'll see what happens. Since you mentioned Netflix, I will mention, I don't know how much y'all looked into that. I think people freaked out a little too much about them talking about them adding an advertisement, solution, which if you didn't pay attention, Netflix at their last earnings, they talked about, maybe adding another price point that had, has advertisements, which is the same as pretty much all the streaming services. Hulu has advertisements. You can watch free stuff on Amazon with advertisements. I think people freaked out because they all of a sudden thought that, you couldn't get Netflix without having the ad version. But what maybe I heard it wrong, but what I took from it was they were adding a cheaper version of Netflix with advertisements. So I think there's still going to be the premium version if you want to pay for the premium version, or if you want to, take a cheaper route. You can watch, 2 minutes of ads every once in a while. And that all is settled around, everyone in the country shares a Netflix password with somebody. So they're going to find a way to take that away. But at the same time, they were going to add a cheaper version of ads. I think people got way too freaked out about that.
Yeah, probably so.
If they were going where you could only pay for a version with ads, that's very different. But if they're still going to give you an option to pay for a premium version, it literally doesn't matter. In fact, it probably makes them more money, because then there'll be less password sharing as they're trying to cut down. But those people will still pay for Netflix at the cheaper rate. But now you have advertisements, which are also making Netflix money as well. So from an investing standpoint, to me, it sounds, pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see how it worked out. Hey, babe, you've been kind of quiet. You got anything to add?
No, I mean, I agree with you on Netflix. And I think it is an additional free tier. And I think part of the reason the market freaked out on Netflix is because they were forecasting to lose subscribers.
Which was based around them cutting password sharing and stuff like that too. Based on that.
Well, no, I think they just started to hit their inflection point until they do start to do that, everyone already has Netflix or someone else's Netflix.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. So in the North America, until they figure that out, the ad stuff should help. But I'm watching Netflix. I haven't done anything with it. I'm just, I'm sitting back and watching and thinking. But it's a good business. It's just like what John was saying is it a good business at this price? I'm not sure.
Yep, I've been watching it too. We're not quite there where I want to buy any yet, but we're starting to get close. And like you said, they're projecting to lose subscribers because everyone already has Netflix. But if they do figure out a way to kind of cut down on this password sharing. Say, 35-40% of people who have Netflix now is just sharing it from someone else. Say they cut that out, and say even 20% of those people don't want to watch Netflix now, but 20% more buys, gets their own Netflix password, then they're all of a sudden gaining a lot more subscribers. So it could very quickly flip the opposite way if they figure that out. Anyhow, we've been talking for about an hour, so I think we've had a good conversation, so we might as well, end it here, save some for next week.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Sounds good to me.
Everyone have a good week. Like I was telling these guys earlier, you're not really down if you don't look, so stay off your phone. And if you're not following us yet, you can do so on Twitter at Swinging It. So be sure to go ahead and do that. Fat Baby Funds, you can follow him. He has a financial blog that he writes, so you can learn some good information there. But besides that, we'll talk to you guys next week. Keep swinging it.
See you guys. The contents of this week's episode of the Just Swinging It podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only. All persons are only given their opinions and are not to be considered financial advice. The Just Swinging It podcast isn't responsible for any financial actions you may take based on the conversations held on this show.